Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about a subject that maybe you will never have to deal with. I know I have had to deal with it. The title of the publication is Blood and Money, Why Families Fight Over Inheritance and What to Do About It. My guest is Mark Asatura. Mark, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Thanks for having me.
This is a subject that when I got information on your book, I said, wow, I've just got to find out what this man has to say. Because as a counselor, I have encountered so many various family situations through the year. I've known people that have inherited millions of dollars that ended up all going to attorneys. Nobody got anything. Because they were fighting with each other. And You are a man who has practiced law for a number of years. You are a senior partner of a estate planning and elder law practice. You're in Michigan, and you decided to put this together, and I was intrigued with a number of points in your book. Why is it that you decided you were going to actually sit down and write a book? I mean, you're a busy man. What prompted you to decide to put some information into print?
Well, Donna, after you do my job, as I have for 30 years, and you see the same patterns coming up of people fighting, brothers and sisters going at it, step-parents with their stepchildren, you wonder, what is it? What is the root cause of these problems? And I wanted to know the answer to that so I could better help these people. And so that's how I got started, and I spent 5 years really delving into some deep psychological theory and evolutionary theory, trying to figure out why people do the things they do.
A lot of it, I've seen firsthand, and sometimes I just shake my head because it's involved so many variables, and there is something about assets. And I know of one family, for example, there was a brother and sister. The brother told the sister long before the parents, and the parents were divorced at the time, long before either one of the parents died, that he was going to make sure he got everything. And the sister said, what is the matter with you? What's the deal? Well, the brother was sitting back waiting for the parents to die because he thought he was going to become a millionaire.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, and then when it happened, well, the one parent died basically in poverty. The other surviving parent was very close to that, but did have some property assets, had some jewelry. It was the mother that lived the longer. And by golly, it was just incredible what this person did. Alienated all of the members of the family, went in, thought they were getting away, literally, with financial assets and everything else, and then all of a sudden the court stopped this person cold, right in the middle of their tracks. Sorry,
right.
But there's another person involved here. You cannot sell. You cannot do this. You cannot do that. Two pieces of property in different states, but the laws were similar relative to liquidating assets. You had to have both parties involved. And, you know, you see this and you go, what is the matter with people? What is it? Is it greed? What is it that creates insanity?
I have the answer to that question. It's not exactly the same in every case, but the fundamentals are the same. And Donna, basically, I look at greed not as the cause of family disputes, but a symptom of other things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, inheritance disputes don't come out of the blue. They are usually the final effect of long-term resentments built up in families by kids that feel that they didn't get enough, they didn't get the same amount, and they are using their parents' death in order to make things right in their mind, to make things equal. And therefore, they have an agenda that when the final chapter is written, they're gonna win. They're going to come out on the winning end. Another factor, frankly, is mental illness. Approximately 10%. Yes. Approximately 10% of the population has a personality disorder that in the DSM is classified as a classic B personality disorder. And they're narcissism, sociopath, histrionic, and a fourth one that doesn't come to mind. But basically, 10% of the population has some form of mental illness, and another 10% have significant traits. So when you say, you know, my brother is crazy, you know, you got about a 20% chance of being right about that.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, that's a perspective that I found in your book that was quite a fascinating one. And it makes it so hard. And then another part that you brought out was how many times the person making out the will, we'll talk about a couple of these personalities that were very famous later, but how many times parents or whoever has written the will wants to sort of manipulate whoever is going to be the survivors in sometimes ways that are just hideous. And I've seen this happen too.
Right. Fortunately, there's a legal doctrine called undue influence that is probably the most successful reason for overturning a will and trust procured by this type of influence. But the concept or the legal doctrine of undue influence basically says that somebody manipulated someone else to do an estate plan at a time where they had diminished capacity. They don't have to be incompetent, but just diminished capacity. Then in those cases, you can overturn the trust. Now, I don't want to get people's hopes up. Basically, any challenges to wills and trusts are difficult, expensive, and there is a relatively low chance of success. But that is, I'm using your example to show that that is one doctrine if someone has used undue influence.
Yes, and I know that occurred with my grandmother, who died in her early 90s. Actually, they were able to catch the mistake. She was not really demented, but she was told by an attorney, this person was unethical, and had said, well, you ought to try this and this and this. And at her age, and she had always been very good at handling her money, I was told that she had been talked into doing something in particular. And she said, oh, okay. And when a certain member of the family found out, and they said, do you understand what this is? And she said, well, this is what I was told. They said, yeah, but this is what's going to happen. And so she said, oh, my goodness, how do we undo this? They said, well, what we do is go back to the attorney and revise it. So fortunately, she was cognizant, you know, she had the cognizance to be able to make a choice and was aware of the mistake. But there was a family member that accompanied her because they said, this woman's in her early 90s. We're not going to let you set her up for a situation that's going to create utter havoc among the family.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, there are those interesting situations that occur.
There are. In my book, Blood and Money, I talk about dementia quite a bit. Now, you never said the word dementia with the 90-year-old woman, but basically it's when someone begins to fail that they are both more susceptible to influence, and also it's the time when predators move in to manipulate the individual to do something different. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, you were saying that the attorney was unethical or was not giving good advice. And someone who is 90 years old, you have to start with the assumption, and it's not always true, but you have to start with the assumption that they may have some form of cognitive difficulty or memory difficulty. And so you have to scrutinize those cases more difficultly, both as an attorney and as a family member.
Right.
And you have to build protections around your family member as they age so that bad things either inadvertently or deliberately don't happen.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the family did. Because this was something that was totally unexpected. And, of course, she went and she told her family what had happened in the conversation, and the red lights went on. It's like, what? What in the world is happening here? You already had everything set up. It's beautifully done. Why are we changing? So everything was reversed, and she really wasn't that unhappy with what had been done. But, again, this is something that really brings a lot of concern. Now, let's talk about inheritance, because you made a comment about wondering if inheritance, as it has been, you know, anticipated, if that is even still going to be relevant in the 21st century. Why do you have that attitude? What do you see as changes that have evolved? And why don't you share a little bit of history regarding inheritance and how it evolved from European aspects?
Sure. Well, you know, once, Donna, I started writing about inheritance, and I've been in the field for 30 years, really my whole professional life, but once you start talking about inheritance, you realize it's literally one of the oldest concepts known to man, and certainly known in the legal community, and it mm-hmm. goes all the way back to Hammurabi's code, roughly 1,000 years B.C.
Oh,
because basically, from the very beginning of time, you had to figure out, hey, what are we going to do with the stuff that this person left behind, and who gets it, and if it goes into the wrong hands, it may perhaps throw off the balance within your family group, your tribe, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so inheritance has been a very, very critical issue for millennia, really. And but going back in history for a century, even a century ago, things like the family farm were instrumental to the success of your offspring.
Mm-hmm.
And so your success as an individual may have depended whether you were an oldest son and inherited the farm, or a daughter and would not receive anything. And inheritances were critical. I argue in the book that from a financial point of view, inheritances are less and less important and will continue to be less important, because it isn't the money that's passed down. We all, you know, our kids have jobs in other states. It comes down to things like education, social connections, and et cetera. But just because the inheritance you receive at your parents' death, and by the way, your parents live to be 85, so you could be 60 when you get it,
mm-hmm.
Just because that financial inheritance will have less impact on how you turn out, it will never lose its importance as an emotional marker of whether your parents loved you, whether you were important in their eyes, etc. So even though a financial inheritance may diminish in importance, it will never lose its impact as a definer of who you are, whether you were loved, whether you're important, and your position in the family. So my argument is this inheritance stuff is going to be around for us, you know, the foreseeable future for our lives and our, mm-hmm. our children's lives, certainly.
Well, I find some of the stories that you have in your book regarding various individuals, and you know, some of them are just absolutely phenomenal. Tony Marshall, the son of Brooke Astor. Now, he was indicted on 18 criminal counts. Tell us that story, because this was just mind-boggling. And I've heard this. I mean, I've heard this not just with, you know, Tony Marshall, but I've heard stories from family members through the years, and I just shake my head. But tell us his story.
Sure. Well, the Brooke Astor story is one that I've included in the book, and it has its own entire chapter, because I think it's a law school or textbook case of many of the concepts that we're describing. Brooke Astor, through inheritance, because she was not born in Astor, she inherited the family fortune, including the family foundation, which contained about $60 million. And that made her the sweetheart of New York, because over her lifetime, she had contributed $200 million to various New York City projects. So she was the grand dam of New York City. Mm-hmm. Well, she lived to be 105, and wow. Her son, Tony, became a little impatient about receiving his inheritance from his mother. And so as we've been talking in this interview, Donna, you know, the concept, he began to manipulate her, especially as she declined, as she her dementia advanced. He began to take her money, and he manipulated her by taking her to different attorneys and changing her wills 5 times, each
wow.
time increasing his own share.
Hmm.
Now, ultimately, the authorities got wind of this when the housekeeper told the grandson, and the grandson narked on his own father and brought the whole house of cards down. But I also, and of course, he was indicted, and he would be in prison, but it's on appeal, and Tony Marshall, the son, is 85, 86 now, and so they're not really pressing it because who wants to put a 90-year-old guy in jail?
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom, I also include the story because there was a much abuse in this family, and this Tony, who is the predator in this case, had been really financially abused even by his own mother and his natural father when he was a kid. So the point of that story that I think is so significant is it's a toxic parent that goes from generation to generation. The things he learned and how he was treated as a kid and how he saw his parents behave, he turned around and did that himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting, sometimes if you scratch beneath the surface, the victims are sometimes predators themselves, and the predators sometimes at other points of their lives are victims. But it's a circular pattern that can pass from generation to generation. That was one of my main points.
That's a very, very good point, because when I think of the brother and sister that I mentioned, interestingly enough, the brother who had just been so absolutely vicious in everything that he had done, he ended up with nothing. He died. He was extremely ill. There was nothing that was left to the family. He had a little bit of something that was left, but really, when he died, his own family was devastated. And
yeah.
So his legacy was just pathetic. Now, the sister is fine. She's just doing beautifully. But it is a full circle, like you say. It's absolutely amazing. And when we hear some of these stories, we just make assumptions about a lot of things, but we don't get down to the bare bones. And that's something that you have been able to do. And again, you have some fascinating stories in here. I do like how you bring up a chapter you call Behaving Like Animals. And I find it so fascinating how there is this sense of possessiveness. And I know I've seen it in certainly other family situations that I've experienced, and I look at it and I go, well, this is just stuff. Why are you so anxious about this? But your point about people saying, well, I'm loved more than you are, and this and this and this should be mine, and you shouldn't have this. And I just think of the tremendous trauma. I know of a family that had inherited something like $17 million. Now, most of us would just go, woohoo, I'm glad I'm going to get, you know, maybe $100,000 or whatever it is that's divvied up, because the will was very explicit. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, there was a member of the family that came to me and said, I was willed $20,000. I think I'm going to sue. I said, what for? And
yeah.
They said, I deserve more. Why? You didn't earn any of this. Be grateful you were even willed the $20,000, because relative to the family status and the other individuals, you're really on the bottom of the totem pole. But this is how people feel.
Well, you know, I use the analogy of the professional ball player who's making $10 million a year and is extremely unhappy because somebody with the same statistics, same batting average, is making $15 million. And we say, how petty. You know, this $10 million is more money than most people make in their lifetime. But it's the same in inheritances. People want to be treated the same as others. And if they get $20,000 and their sister got $25,000, they have been mortally wounded. Because money is how we keep score. And the $5,000 that another family got more means that there's 5,000 times more important. It is kind of bizarre. But Donna, I also want to comment on behaving like animals. That may sound like an insensitive thing for me to say, but from that chapter is really about evolutionary psychology, mm-hmm. and basically the principle that much of our human behavior is learned over time from an evolutionary point of view, and it's, you know, sibling rivalry and the favoritism within a family and the treatment of stepchildren really can be traced back to our evolutionary roots of what we needed to do to survive and procreate, sort of Darwin's theory. Mm-hmm. And it's when I came across these theories, I just found it amazing that you could explain modern human inheritance behavior on the base of an evolutionary pattern. And I do think that it's a fascinating topic.
Well, you bring out a point that really I could relate to because of the history that I'm aware of. You go back to the Middle Ages and you talk about how lifespans were extremely short. And of course, in the Middle Ages, it was less than 50% of children that survived. Most boy babies died before the age of 5. Girl babies had a stronger stamina. Mother Nature just has made it that way. And in those days, for people to live to be 25 or 35 years of age was really something. If you got to the age of 40, you were old. And you bring this out and you say how parents rarely live to see their kids reach adulthood. I mean, these were times that were very harsh, extremely harsh. And so a lot of what has evolved came from that. You talk about the standards at the time and the surviving son, because the boys typically died. So if you had a son that could pass on, get married, have children, this type of thing, things went to him. And, of course, women were often in a very subservient positioning, and many times in cultural aspects, they weren't entitled to anything. The only way a woman could get anything was through a marriage, and that they were married off right and left if they survived long enough, and most of them died in childbirth, which is something that we don't even think about. So a lot of things that evolved came from circumstances like that. How do you protect the property? Where do the pearls go? Why is the gold in the chest so important, and why should it go to, you know, Father Abraham or Mickey Mouse? Why do we give it to this, that, or the other? And sometimes it goes to uncles, sometimes it goes to, you know, whoever's surviving. It's really a fascinating historical perspective.
Well, much of the statistics that, you know, you cite were the influencing factors in the story of Cinderella, which I talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And Cinderella's story is a story of medieval inheritance. It's a Grimm's fairy tale, of course. It was an oral tradition written down by the Grimm's brothers. But basically, it's the story of a girl who doesn't inherit anything, and if she is going to get anything, she's got to marry a prince.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story of her evil stepmother who knows her future, and having a roof over her head is important. It's going to be critical for her, not as pretty daughters as Cinderella, to also marry a prince. So there's great cruelty in Cinderella, and the term Cinderella comes from the fireplace cinders. So a little cinder, a little throwaway girl is the moral of that story. She's going to marry a prince, and everybody else has to marry a prince, and so the competition is fierce.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you know, women really didn't get property rights until about the mid-1800s during the Married Women's Property Acts, both here and in England. So women have had a very, very cruel and rough road in inheritance, and it's only been in the modern era that a wife is the first benefactor of her deceased husband. That's a relatively new phenomena historically.
Mm-hmm. It's really, history is just amazing. And you also bring out something in your book, disinheriting someone. I mean, that was always a big deal, if you were disinherited from the family. And that's a whole different kettle of fish, because there are people that really don't like certain individuals, and they do not want them to receive anything. And you make a comment that in the United States, to disinherit a member of your family, your children, very few places in the world can you do this. And that was a surprise to me. I thought that in Europe this was also possible, but apparently not.
No. We have the greatest testamentary freedom in the United States than in any other country. In other words, you don't have to leave to anybody if you don't want to, but that also means you don't have to leave to your children.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in European countries, they have something called the civil code, and children have a legal entitlement. But, Donna, I make the point that disinheritance is an extremely painful thing, and I use the analogy, it's like being made an orphan retroactive to your birth. If you are sort of disowned and disinherited as the final statement of your parent, then it's as if you were never their child, and it's devastating. I also say that it's so devastating that people that wonder that they might be disinherited take preemptive action and manipulate the parent to go get their money so they don't get inherited. So it creates a lot of anxieties, the concept of being disinherited, and makes people do what appears from the outside to be pretty crazy things.
Well, I just think it's sad that anybody thinks they're entitled to anything. I mean, to me, if someone has, I hope they'll spend it in their lifetime. In fact, I always get a kick out of the bumpers on the back of RVs. We're spending our children's inheritance. And I really think that that's pretty cool in many respects, because we are living so much longer. And it's not going to be unusual for people to be like Ms. Astor, living to be over 100 years of age. So you've got other issues of how do you plan what you want done, because if you have to be in care, your assets may have to be liquidated so that you get that care.
Right. But I mean, I want to change that around a little bit and say, as a parent, you have a responsibility to be as fair to your children as possible, making things as equal as possible, and also to appoint people to important positions in your will, your trust, and your powers of attorney so that you don't hurt any feelings. Because even though children are not entitled, and in the United States they are legally not entitled to anything, they have no legal right, that is, you still want to create equal love and the feeling of importance in each and one of your children. You know, as good parents do all children's lives, but I find that there's a lot of neglect when it comes to doing estate planning at the end of life. And, you know, people need to be more conscientious about that, because even though they'll be dead, they will leave a legacy, and you don't want that legacy to be one of hurt, where children forever feel as though they've been cheated, because that'll also break up your family. If you have feelings like that, they may never talk to one another again.
Well, as you can tell, this is a very interesting topic. My guest, Mark Astor, has put together a book based on experiences he's had and for the purpose of also making people think about what they're going to do. It's titled Blood and Money, Why Families Fight Over Inheritance and What to Do About It. And, Mark, where can people find out more about the book? I know we can get this at Amazon, but what's your website?
BloodandMoneyBook.com.
Now, is that the full word and or the symbol?
Full word and.
Okay.
BloodandMoneyBook.com.
Okay. Well, it has been a delight having you as a guest, talking about a subject that, my goodness, we definitely read about, and people of tremendous wealth and traumas that they go through, and I think of the Mickey Rooneys of life and all kinds of things that comes to the public view And there are so many other stories around that many of us never hear about, but maybe we've experienced within our own family structure. So this is a fascinating group of perspectives. And also you give a lot of resource information, talk a little bit about elder law, and it's really a very informative book. And Mark, again, I want to thank you for being with me. Mark's last name is spelled A-C-C-E-T-T-U-R-A, Acetura. Thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
It's time to get your glow on. March 2nd through 4th at the Northwest Women's Show, a show that's all about you. 400 exhibits, 5 entertainment stages, over 60 seminars, and best of all, shopping. New this year are special theme days with prizes. On Fitness Friday, wear your tennis shoes. Then stay for Girls Night Out from 5 till 8, packed with wild and crazy fun. The Fashion Police will be there on Stylin' Saturday. And let your glow shine on Spirit Sunday. Meet actress and author Linda Evans, Dave from Dave's Killer Bread and his rockin' band, and Hollywood numerologist Glynis McCants, plus fashion shows from JCPenney, favorite authors Anne and Leslie Rule, and back for all 3 days, Seattle's hottest firefighters. Northwest Women's Show, sponsored by Safeway, BECU, Constant Contact, and Como TV. At Century Link Event Center, March 2nd through 4th, the Northwest Women's Show. It's such a girl thing. Learn more at nwwomenshow.com.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic. Safe for children, too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. For those of you that might be new listeners, well, I welcome you to the show and also want you to know all you have to do is give me your first name or initial. And after that, well, just relax. I'll tell you what I perceive and then you can ask me about anything that is important to you that you would like to know about. So again, it is 888-627-6008. Well, tomorrow we're going to be talking about Mark Twain. This is a writer. I just absolutely love Mark Twain. I think that as a writer, he is just unequaled in the way that he's able to convey information and bring thoughts and images across. In many ways, some of the things that he says, you think, nothing's really changed in life. We're still going through the same stuff. But anyway, that's what we've got going. Peggy Morris had a delightful poem. She said, pretty little crocus in the snow through winter's chill, how do you grow? Adorned in yellow, you are sublime and bring to earth beauty divine. Crocus are coming up. I found that hard to believe. My goodness. But I'm seeing the shoots here in the Pacific Northwest are already like 4 to 6 inches in height, and flowers are putting out buds. It has been, for all of our wacky weather, whether it goes from freezing to snowing to hail to freezing again to rain to violent winds, I mean, we really have a delightful array of weather conditions, I guess that's a nice way of putting it, that create challenges. In fact, some people were saying to me, we might have snow. I passed a neighbor just yesterday. I said, you still got your studded tires on? He said, we may have snow this weekend. I said, you've got to be kidding. But, you know, I've been in the Northwest for a few years, and we did one year have snow in the month of May. So, it can happen, but that's what makes this area so fascinating. So wherever you are, I hope you are thoroughly enjoying yourself, because that's important. You know, wherever you are, you need to just live in the moment. You need to be grateful for what you have. You need to look at life with an attitude, not just of gratitude, but also that maybe something miraculous is going to happen in your day. And it's amazing. Have you ever watched children, how when they're playing, they're very mindful of what they're doing? They're totally engrossed in what they're doing. It has all of their attention. And when they're finished with whatever it is they're doing, then they shift. And I think mindfulness, we can learn a lot from our dogs relative to that kind of an attitude, as well as our children. I think they have a wonderful, wonderful lesson to impart to us. And they teach us in so many subtle ways. So enjoy your moments. Whatever you're doing, really be present in your moments. Be present with where you are. I'll never forget one man sharing with me when I was doing a class. I was asking about what they really, you know, what things they enjoy that help them to get focused. I know we've got a caller, but let me share this thought with you quickly. This gentleman said to me, when I went around to each person, and various people said various things, but this one, I never forgot. He said, ironing. Now, as a woman, I've ironed millions of pieces of clothing through the years, as most of we women have. And I said to him in utter astonishment, ironing? Are you serious? And he said, yes. For him, ironing a shirt, ironing clothes, ironing pillowcases was therapeutic. He said there is something about the smell that allowed him to relax, to feel like he said it was just, it's something for me. There are these wonderful smells from clean clothes, and when the heat of the iron hits those clothes and I'm pressing the wrinkles out, he said, it's like a meditation for me. And I thought, wow, that's impressive. So ladies, when you get out your iron, look at it as a form of meditation, especially if you have 50 to 60 pieces you have to do. So anyway, it's all perspective, isn't it? But for him, that was a joyful thing to do. Somebody else, it might be mowing the lawn. Somebody else, it might be doing the windows. Somebody else, it might be reading a romance novel and having a piece of chocolate. Whatever works. But be in that moment. Be in it. Be grateful for it. And enjoy your life. Let's take our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show. This is Donna, first name or initial. And where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Anchorage, first initial A.
Well, hi, A. Thank you very much for calling in from Anchorage. And let's see what we've got here. The first thing that is coming into my mind is you're reviewing a legal document. Now, this is has nothing to do with a lawsuit. It is a legal document, and you are going to be putting your name to that piece of paper. So this contract, if you will, I'll use that term, that might be more appropriate, you need to really read the fine print, because there is a level of responsibility or obligation, there's a time frame, there's something in this contract that you must truly be aware of. Because once you put your John Henry down, you are going to find that you will be very unhappy if you don't do that. You're going to say, I didn't realize this, and you're going to be stuck with the contract. So be aware, be wise, take care of business, don't put your name to anything unless you really understood what's in front of you. And don't assume that the person that is handing you the contract even understands half of it, because I don't think they do. So you need to read it. Then the next thing I'm looking at, I'm seeing you standing in a shop, a car shop, and there is some work that needs to be done on the automobile, and I would encourage you to get a second opinion. And it might cost you to have to get a second opinion, but I think you really need to check it out, because I don't believe that the repair has to be as costly as what initially is going to be proposed to you. So I want you to be sure that you get a second opinion. There's something about money going on here that needs to be really paid attention to. You don't want to end up losing money. So I think that being attentive to detail is going to serve you well. Do you have a question for me?
Kind of. I'm in a relationship with somebody that loves me very much, but I'm very confused. Is it because it's kind of a new relationship, or should I run, or should I stay? It's like, and then the other thing, when I'm stressed, I do iron.
Oh, you do iron, so you could relate to the story. Oh, boy, that's
so
cool. That's wonderful. Well, now, let's talk about this relationship. Why is it that you feel you've got to have everything nailed down with this? Why is it you cannot be comfortable with the relationship? Why are you trying to make it into something instead of just letting it evolve?
I think because I've made two wrong choices last time, and it's scary, you know?
Well, something that I think you need to make okay. You don't have to put this into a marriage. You don't have to move in with the individual. You can have a relationship with someone and be comfortable and not be bound. I think that what you're dealing with, more than the person, are a lot of belief systems that you really are not comfortable embracing anymore, but you don't have anything really to put in their place. And I would just like for you to make it okay that you don't have to make a commitment to anyone. It's not necessary at this time. And if they're trying to pressure you into it, on whatever level it is, you just need to say, it's not acceptable. I do not need to do that. Your discomfort is partially because you think that this person who has been in your life, is you owe it to them. You don't owe it to them. I think that's one of the most difficult things that women have to deal with. If they become intimate with someone, or they're seeing them on a consistent basis, it's just, gee whiz, I guess this is it. I guess I've got to really be committed here. No. That's not, you know, you make a choice because it's the right choice for you. But don't let anyone hog tie you into it. Am I making sense?
No. Yes, you are making sense. And, yes.
See, I
have more questions, but I think I will... ponder.
Well, if you ponder, or you can always call me privately if you want. That's something that you can always do. But because we're not going to have time to go into detail, but I think it's very important that you honor yourself, first of all. Number two, realize that if you're spending time with someone, you want to spend that time with them because it's your choice to do that.
Okay.
And they may have a need of having you live with them, and, gee, we're going to be hunky-dory, and we're going to do all this. No, no, no. You don't play a game of house. It's ridiculous. It's like 60s mentality. No. What you want to do is enjoy who you are, enjoy your space, and deal with some of the things. You really have to face certain fears. You have to deal with those and have integrity with that, and then allow it to be what it's going to be. Don't try to make this into anything. Just be comfortable with it.
Okay.
You don't have to be obligated to someone. You can enjoy someone's company. But a lot of this comes from training, and it's very difficult. In training, dogma, indoctrination, men and women both go through this stuff. And it's not necessary. But we have to be awake so that we can think through things. And then when we do feel we are in the right environment with the right person, it flows. You don't have this kind of discord if it's flowing.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate it. And I will have to call and set up a private one with you. I appreciate
it.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, dear. Not a problem. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a minute. Hey, do you like pancakes? I've got a recipe for you, sweet potato pancakes with maple butter. Uh-huh, something different. So let's tickle your taste buds with a wonderful recipe. When we come back, I've got more good things to share. So stay by, and we'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Quick like a bunny, before I give you the information on this wonderful sweet potato pancake recipe, I wanted to remind those of you who are listening from Washington, this Saturday, the 25th, I'm going to be speaking on Power Mind at the East West Bookshop in Seattle at 7 o'clock. Admission is $15. I will be speaking as well as doing demonstrations. So that's going to be going on. And then the following week, woo-hoo, the Northwest Women's Show. Yes, March 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. This is an event I've been participating in for like 12 years. It's absolutely magnificent. Ladies, you can't miss this. Now, I'm going to be doing a forum on Friday, March 2nd, the opening day, from 1 p.m. until 4. 4. We are going to have dynamic speakers at the Girl Talk stage, so come on over, meet some absolutely awesome people. All the information is posted up on my website, also at the NorthwestWomenshow.com. And then on Sunday, I'm going to be talking on a topic, Spirit Talk, at 11:30. Now, for the entire weekend, I also will be available for many consultations, so stop on by, say hello. We're going to be having a drawing, and there's just all kinds of good things going on. Then, on March 24th, I will be participating in the Emerald Spiral Expo at the Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. So you can go to emeraldspiral.com, find out all the details on that, and I'll have more information as that gets closer. Okay, if you want to give me a call, 888-627-6008, and also, that pad of paper and pen, I hope it's handy, because if you like pancakes, brunch, Sunday mornings, I don't know about you, but in the SIBO household, when there is the opportunity, I love to cook, and I like to try different things. And so often, that's the super-duper breakfast, either a fixed quiche or French toast or, you know, whatever it is. And then that's our time to be together, to enjoy good food, and to make everything look pretty. So it's really a wonderful, wonderful day that we enjoy. But this is a recipe that I thought gives a different twist to pancakes. And sweet potatoes are marvelous. We just love them in the SIBO household. And when I came across this recipe, I said, yes, this is something I definitely want to share. Now, what you have to have is 1 cup of all-purpose flour, 1 cup of all-purpose flour, a tablespoon packed of light brown sugar, You need a teaspoon of baking powder, a half a teaspoon each of baking soda and ground cinnamon and ground nutmeg. So a half a teaspoon each of baking soda, ground cinnamon, ground nutmeg, about a quarter of a teaspoon of salt. You're going to need an egg. You're going to need 3/4 cup of cooled, dry mashed sweet potatoes. Buy it canned. That's going to save you time. So you can just get a small can of already cooked, processed sweet potatoes, drain them, and just mash them up, and you've got them ready for the recipe. 3/4 cup of milk, and I'd recommend whole milk, or actually half and half instead of skim milk, and 1/2 cup of plain yogurt, 2 tablespoons of butter, and that butter needs to be melted, and then you're going to need some oil, whatever your favorite vegetable oil is. Then you're going to perhaps want some maple butter, and I'll give you the recipe for making that. That's real simple. And you might want to have some some fruit as a complement. Now, this is what you do. Your oven, you want to preheat your oven to warm. So, because as you're cooking the pancakes, you want to be able to put them into the warm oven so they'll stay nice until you're ready to serve. Now, in your bowl, you want to have your dry ingredients, your flour, your sugar, your baking powder, your soda, your cinnamon, nutmeg, and salt. Just whip that together. It takes you all 30 seconds. And then in another bowl, you want to take your eggs, you want to beat them up, and then you want to stir in your sweet potatoes, your milk, your yogurt, and butter. You know what's handy is if you got a hand mixer, zip, zip, it's all done. And then using a rubber spatula now, you're going to take your flour mixture and fold it into the sweet potato mixture. You don't beat this. You fold it. And, of course, you're going to have a skillet or a griddle. You want it to be nice and hot. Test it with water until those water bubbles just dance all over and evaporate very quickly. You're going to use a little oil. And nonstick cooking spray is great. Just spray it on, but you got to be ready to move quickly with the batter. You're going to work in batches. You add about 1/4 cup of batter per pancake to the skillet. And just flip like you do ordinary pancakes. And it's going to be absolutely delicious with maple butter. We love maple syrup. And here's how you make the maple butter. You're going to take 1/2 cup of butter, 2 tablespoons of pure maple syrup, mix it together. That is easy. Real, real simple, and it's just so delicious. Kids like bananas and other things to go with it, but I'm telling you, this is so good. And you could add, if you wanted to add a little bit more flavor to the pancakes, you could maybe use a little bit of cloves. There's just all kinds of spices that really go well with sweet potatoes. So cinnamon is the number one. But it is really going to be very tasty, very flavorful. And I think it's going to be something that's different. And, of course, it's also going to have that wonderful golden color to it because of the sweet potatoes that are in the mixture. I know we're out of time. I hope you will join me tomorrow. We're going to have a wonderful guest, and we're going to be talking about Mark Twain. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you so much for joining me today. Enjoy your life and be a shining light to the people that are around you. We need as much light as we possibly can, so turn yours on and let it beam. This is Donna. Talk to you tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.